Alrighty, people, welcome back to episode 29 of Primal Alchemy's Red Pill Initiation Hour, here with your host, Chris Story. Now, for all the returning listeners, you guys know the gist by now. There's a few little things that we have to cover before we can really kick off today's episode. The first being a thank you, a massive thank you at that, for the continuous love and support you guys are showing me at the end of each and every podcast. Your feedback is critical. It really is, guys. It really is critical, and it allows me to improve this podcast to make it as beneficial and as enjoyable as possible. You guys are giving me 2 hours of your day to listen to what I got to say, and I want to make sure that you get the most out of it. And as a massive thank you, I'll always give you an exclusive 10% discount code, REDPILL. That's the code REDPILL that, when used at checkout, you're getting an exclusive 10% discount from anything within your shopping basket. So if this is the first time that you've been introduced to the Primal Alchemy brand, this is the perfect opportunity to check out primalalchemy.co.uk and grab yourself Vitruvian Protein. That's our flagship organic whey protein superfood blend forged with adaptogenic, nootropic, and prebiotic herbs, also mixed with high vibrational superfoods from around the world in order to give you pound for pound the best health supplement that can be made. I source all the ingredients myself, formulated it myself. Part of the sale profits go towards a few very close to my heart charities that I'm working with. It really is the full shazam. So hopefully you guys appreciate it. Check it out. And if it works for you, remember Red Pill and you'll get 10% off. I'm also not stopping there, guys. Also going to be dropping you another exclusive discount code. This one from my soul brother Josh's brand, APE Nutrition. APE Nutrition creates a keto bar, which is the UK's first truly ketogenic protein bar. This thing is delicious. I've smashed many within the past few months of getting to know Josh and hanging out with him. And yeah, I'm glad to have him on board as a sponsor of the podcast. So guys, check out apenutrition.co.uk. And if you use the code PRIMALAPE, you'll get 10% discount code. 10% discount code? You'll get 10% discount on anything within your shopping basket. All right, so moving on to today's episode, guys. We have Dr. Nicole Lipera. Nicole is a holistic psychologist based out of Philadelphia. She trained at Cornell University, which, for people that don't know, means that she's fucking legit and knows what she's talking about. We had a really interesting chat. She is an Instagram favorite, a real smart mind, and it was great to be able to explore that with her. We discussed ancestral foods. We discussed the paradigm shifts that are needed to take place in order for us to really optimize our mental health in today's mental world that we live in. And just had a good chat with Nicole. We covered a lot of subjects, and guys, hopefully you really enjoy this one as much as I did. So please drop me a review afterwards. If you want, get in contact with Nicole and tell her what you think. Her Instagram handle is the.holistic.psychologist. Or hit me up on Instagram, Primal Alchemy UK, and let me know what you think. Other than that, guys, let's kick today's episode off. Morpheus, tell these fools what's up.
You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
As above, so below, what lies without resides within. Time for growth to begin. Mental, physical, and spiritual. We find balance with all three as we focus on totality. The whole, not the half. This is for those on a spiritual path. Looking for the clues to the answers of life. But the truth ain't always nice, so leave your ego at the door. Let your inner lion roar and your spirit soar. As we go deep down to the molecular level, tap into the body with some yogic breath. Throw in some calisthenics for a true strength test. Like the shamans of old, we use nature to heal. With a little bit of DMT to reveal. This whole life journey is a little surreal. And your mind needs a leader, not a follower in life. Let your mind be the master and you pay a hefty price. This next 60 minutes is about self mastery. It's not an easy path and it's a lifelong journey, but we up to empower with this red pill initiation hour. With this red pill initiation hour, brought to you by Primal Alchemy.
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Three, two, one, and oh shit, guys, we're live. We're back with episode 29 of the Red Pill Initiation Hour here with your host, Chris Story. And today's guest is going to be a blast, guys. We're really going to enjoy this one. A little bit of a different subject as well, as we're starting to get used to with this podcast series. I'm really trying to diversify the range of guests with different interests, different passions, different things to say, and it just creates a better picture for you guys in the puzzle I'm trying to create in your mind of what being human is truly about. So yeah, today's guest is Dr. Nicole Lepera, aka the Holistic Psychologist. And yeah, thank you for coming on, Nicole.
Awesome, thank you so much for having me, Chris. I truly appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. I've been you're a fan favorite amongst the conscious, quote unquote, woke as fuck crowd. There's a lot of them that really do big you up. They love your content. They love what you've got to say. And I see why. It's, I think you're great. I love the shit that you put out there. And I love the message that you stand for. And it's interesting. There's a lot of things that I see on your stories, see on what you post, that's very authentic to yourself. And you're not trying to fall into a ideology, into a tribe, into any strict sort of boundaries. I like it. You keep it with your heart open, and yeah, you drop some truth along the way. So for everybody that's listening who may not be familiar with yourself, Nicole, could you give us a little bit of a breakdown of who Dr. Nicole Lepera is, a little bit of a background on you, and yeah, then we'll branch off from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very, because those of you out there listening can't see me, I have a big smile on my face and very humbled by all of those words. Thank you. I so appreciate you saying that. So who I am actually by profession, a traditionally trained clinical psychologist. So anyone out there listening who's ever heard of a psychologist or been to a psychologist, I went to school for many years to do just that. I am a person who was going to be a psychologist as long as I can remember. I was very fascinated with the mind, since childhood. So was always on that path, went to a whole hell of a lot of school, and came out the other side. And I always joke because, you know, you saying and acknowledging why one of the reasons why I had a big smile on my face is saying that I, you know, kind of have my unique and I'm, you know, doing my own thing and not fitting into a box. I love that. And I've always kind of felt that about myself, even in my training. And, you know, so I got out of school, I started to practice, you know, the way you imagine it to be, a couch, talking, all of that. And I actually went through my own healing crisis and went and really pretty much reorganized my lifestyle and healed my body, healed myself through nutrition. I'm someone, I guess I should mention, who struggled my entire life with anxiety, panic. So I totally understood. And even though like I was the professional in the room, I was also still continuing to struggle until, like I said, I reorganized my lifestyle. I made huge dietary changes. I made huge lifestyle shifts, and I was really finally able to get some ground in terms of my own healing. At that moment, my life and my clinical career and my professional world really just transitioned fully. I started to really realize the importance of the body and in how keeping the body out of, you know, the traditional mental wellness realm was hugely problematic. So I started to incorporate everything that I was doing in terms of my own healing into my practice, started to call myself a holistic psychologist, and started to really realize that everyone really inherently can heal themselves. That's a really big part of my message that I like to get out there. But it really began with understanding, I think, the connection between the mind and the body that I think was so largely overlooked.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, one of the things that my Primal Alchemy brand is about is physical, mental, and spiritual optimization. And it's not just about isolating either, like any of those. It's about being able to unify and synchronize all of them together. And then the deeper you get into it, the more you see how closely interconnected everything is. And yeah, it's like, if you're taking care of the body, you got to take care of the mind. If you're taking care of the mind, you got to take care of the spirit. If you're taking care of the spirit, you're taking care of the body and the mind. It's all very closely interwoven and very fascinating the deeper you get into it. So yeah, one of the things I thought we could just, yeah, we'd just branch off on to begin with, because I heard you pick, like you mentioned it then briefly, is to do with the, with nutrition. So we can really take multiple routes with this one. I wouldn't mind just discussing, yeah, just your views on nutrition for optimal mental health. Obviously we got science is beginning to progress now, where we're getting a good understanding of the enteric nervous system, the gut brain connection, things around those lines. So yeah, if we start on that, we can and then we can push through and expand as we move on with that subject.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, you know, what science is now beginning to, well, science has shifted in, I think, two major ways that inform the way I practice, and honestly, the way I think that all mental wellness, and, you know, has to be taken into consideration. And the first way is moving away from the, you know, kind of genetic predeterminization reductionistic model, meaning, right, if I have a gene for something, I get that something, whether or not it's a physical ailment or a mental, you know, kind of ailment or what have you. And so the new science out there, epigenetics, says otherwise, says that yes, we are, you know, we do have genetic, you know, we get genes that are, you know, coded at birth that are passed on, you know, from our families, from our parents, but that ultimately our lifestyle choices really play a huge pivotal effect on, you know, whether or not those genes are going to express themselves, as in we're going to get that thing or not. Mm-hmm. And that's where nutrition comes in, because obviously that's one of the big lifestyle choices that affect our internal environments, that definitely affect whether or not these genes are turning on or off, as well as the fact that you touched upon it. So we're starting to realize that our gut is actually the locus of a lot of important things that happen beyond, you know, nutrient absorption. So the way the traditional, you know, kind of psychology, mental wellness, you know, world viewed things was that the hub was our brains, right? So people out there who are suffering from anxiety or depression, you know, and might be medicated for that, you know, usually have been told, or the conceptualization has been, there's a brain issue, right, where you're not getting, or you're getting too much of a certain neurotransmitter, so a brain chemical, obviously I'm simplifying it, right, and that's contributing to your symptoms. But now we're realizing that actually our guts are playing a huge role in terms of whether or not those neurotransmitters are being made, and that there's a lot of science out there that a lot of the foods that we're eating, is a lot of us have gut damage, you know, based on the food we're eating, the choices we're making, a whole bunch of other things. And that ultimately gut damage, you know, not only affects nutrient absorption, which obviously is going to affect the way our brain is functioning or not, results in inflammation. There's a big new model of depression even that has to do with so brain inflammation as being a huge cause of the symptoms, right? The sluggishness, the lack of energy, the brain fog, as well as, like I said earlier, the fact that a lot of these neurotransmitters are being produced in the gut, right? Which is really just pointing to the importance of the food we're eating, you know, and how that does affect somewhere upstream the way our brains are working, our moods, you know, and everything in between, pretty much.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It seems to be that people have gut conditions, if they have like irritable bowel syndrome, they have like leaky gut, if you have some form of, let's say, like a breach within the gut, within your gut lining, again, it's like as above, so below. It's going to be you're going to also have that same sort of breach up on the neural level as well. And you're going to have shit that's going through the blood brain barrier that you just don't want, and that you may not be aware of. And it's, what's our main sort of culprits we're looking at when it comes to nutrition within the, and the effect that it can have on the gut and also the brain as well, if you're taking in the wrong sort of foods?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's obviously the big things that cause direct gut damage. The biggest one, and you know, I'm always the bearer of this bad news, is gluten. That literally just pokes holes directly into the gut wall. Again, allowing toxins out. And to speak to your point, those toxins are in your bloodstream. Before you know it, those same toxins are getting through that blood-brain barrier. All of the processed oils, which again, problematically, anyone who eats out, you know, in restaurants are having these processed oils. And sugar. Sugar is hugely problematic. Sugar is problematic. It causes a lot of inflammation, again, inflaming that gut wall and, you know, upstream, like I said, causing inflammation in the brain. You know, then there's soy and corn and, you know, there's very much more on the list. But whenever I'm kind of giving people a starting point, you know, I'm saying, you know, for sure, get that gluten out, get that sugar out. Watch the amount of processed oil that you're consuming, because those are just huge glaring problems for any human. You know, I know historically the gluten was, you know, it was designated to only those who had the, you know, diagnosis imprint of celiac, or, you know, any version of that. But I mean, I do believe that it's actually problematic across humans at this point.
Yeah, there's so many extra variables attached to gluten itself. So you got the gluten, you got the wheat germ, agglutinin, you got the gliadin, the zonulin. So that's going to have a big effect on your neurological functioning. But one of the things as well with gluten as well, especially if, well, with most processed food, it's going to be the glyphosate. And I know that's a big issue with the herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, insecticides, all of this shit that's just sprayed. I mean, it's a little bit different stateside than it is here over in the UK. Slightly different standards in food safety laws and what's passed and what's not. But I know that over your side of the pond, it's pretty hectic. It's pretty crazy. You guys, it's like the Wild Wild West over there when it comes to food. And it's a hard one, because when you go to say just avoid gluten, it's not as easy as some people believe, because it kind of is everywhere. There's sneaky ways of being able to cover it up on food labeling. There's a lot of legislation, lobbying that's really big in the States that allows these food manufacturers to cover a lot of shit, and it makes big bang for them, makes big buck for them. But who are the people that pay for it? It's going to be the consumers. It's going to be the people who are just kind of being blindly led astray, wondering what's going on with their health. And yeah, just with the other stuff you were saying, with the sugar, with the hydrogenated vegetable oils, it's interesting being in the UK, because we ride the wave of the US. So whatever happens over with you guys, you're kind of like an experimentation in that we kind of just watch what's happening, and we're like, oh, okay, so you can see where that industry's going, or you can see where, if that's going to be making an appearance here in a few years. So it gives us like a little bit of time to prepare, at least if you switch on.
You're welcome.
No, yeah. Yeah, it's sorry for your expense, guys, but yeah. So let's as much as I like to shit on a lot of different, on the bad nutrition, it's also really important to tell people what the right nutrition is. And I know that me and you, we have very similar outlooks when it comes to nutrition, because we seem to be following a very ancestral based diet. Like I see your stories where you're there and you've got liver, you've got just like real high fat, nutrient dense foods with fat soluble vitamins galore, fermented foods, everything. So yeah, if you can give us a rundown on how you feel that affects us, not just about the benefits as a totality of the benefits, but let's branch into the psychology as well, the psychological effects.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I do follow an ancestral diet, coming from actually 3 to 4 years of vegetarianism, veganism. So I had a, you know, pretty severe health things occurring, which prompted me to look into nutrition and change my diet. So I speak from both ends. I was vegetarian thinking it was for health-based reasons. Obviously, I then watched all of the ethical, you know, videos and then, you know, merged the two. But I say this because, you know, after shifting my diet, I came to just truly understand how important some of the nutrients that we are getting from the animal products are for the human brain and for mental wellness. You know, and again, I don't like to argue and go into, I know this is a hugely opposing, you know, camp out there with, you know, animal product, no animal product. And I don't engage in that. I just think, you know, that for mental wellness, there are some vitamins, you know, so the first one, the nutrients that come to mind is B12. And I just know that so B12 is so important. It actually creates the myelin or the fatty covering in our around our nerves, and it has, you know, it has effects from when we move, you know, giving us our motor capabilities, to the way our brains are functioning, our memory. Aging adults have a really hard time absorbing this. So, you know, in B12, why I'm always eating the livers and the animal products is that they are just nutrient powerhouses for that. So in terms of mental wellness, I think that a lot of times, and a lot of times the things that people are describing and maybe getting a diagnosis of depression, are actually the results of a B12 deficiency. So I think it's very, very important psychologically, you know, for our mental wellness to make sure that we're getting, you know, the appropriate amounts of B12 in our diets. Another huge heavy hitter for all things, animal fat, really, really important for brain health. Our cells are, you know, very much cholesterol based. You know, we need that to, when we're thinking about brain cells, for our brains to be functioning. A lot of the brain fogs and things like that are just when our brains aren't as healthy or as optimal as they can be. Another big powerhouse for all things brain health are omegas. So really making sure, if you're not, you know, someone out there who eats the fatty fish, making sure that you're getting either the cod liver oil supplement or something like that. I have a bottle that sits in my fridge. I do love fatty fish, so I get it both ways. But in terms of mental wellness, we need those omegas for our brains to function. I go there because in our brain sits our emotional centers. So a lot of times when we're not getting these nutrients, you know, you'll have not only the symptoms, like I was saying earlier, like the lethargy, the lack of energy, the, you know, mental dullness, the brain fog, but emotional reactivity, I think, is a huge other, you know, kind of commonality that a lot of people who nutritionally are deficient will complain of. You know, like, I'm flying off the handle, I'm angry all the time, I can't control my emotions. And again, that's because, you know, our brain centers are housed, and, you know, the way our nervous systems work are so interconnected with our cellular health, our nerve health, and our brain health. And when we're not optimal in those areas, we start to, you know, kind of emotionally present in these much more unstable ways.
One thing I wanted to bring up quickly. Do you eat your liver raw? Have you had it raw before?
I have had it raw, and I actually have. High meat. I don't know if you're familiar with high meat, where you sit it out and let it ferment.
No, what's this?
Raw liver.
No, yes.
People probably think I'm insane, crazy. It's sitting in my fridge right now. So you chop up some raw liver, you put it in, like, I have mine in a mason jar, and you open it up every day and air it out, and you let it sit there and ferment for months. Some people do it for a year.
Wow.
And it, yeah, all the good bacteria chomps it up. It ends up tasting and smelling like cheese. But yeah, some people say it has, like, you know, it can make you a little bit high feeling, but the good bacteria in that, is as counterintuitive as that sounds, is pretty high. So yes, I have had it raw. I've eaten it before, you know, before I ferment it. I eat all types of organ meat. I've liked that before, I guess, in people's defense who don't like organ meat. I was always a very adventurous eater. I started as a meat eater, obviously, and I liked all that type of stuff. So getting back into it was a pleasure for me. I actually like that stuff.
Wow, never heard. Wow, actually, I guess I have heard of that one before, but not with the liver. I heard of it with different meats. Wow, I'm gonna try that. So how long?
I've done it with a fish before too. I've done it with, I think I have cod in there as well, and then I did some with liver. Mine's in there. It's going on a couple months right now, but I've heard people who do it for years. It depends, you know.
And
I've tried it along the way.
And how, like, can you eat it along the way, or do you want to just keep it fermenting?
Well, both. Like I said, I've tried it because I was interested. It was my first batch of the liver, so I was like, what's this going to be like? So I've tasted it along the way, and I have a good amount in there, so it'll continue to ferment for as long as I decide.
Wow.
It doesn't mess. It won't mess it up or stop it, because you're opening it anyway to get lots of oxygen in there for the bacteria.
And how long should you let the oxygen react with it before you seal it back?
I don't know if there's, like, a protocol. I leave it out for like 20 minutes, something like that. Sometimes I forget, and I'm like, oh shit, I go back and close it up, put it back. So, you know, all different times. I'm experimenting with this first batch.
Damn, Nicole, I'm going to be trying that one out. That's something new for me. I like that. And another thing I wanted to bring up, I don't know if this is your specialty in particular, but I am interested in this because it is a common, well, I say it's a common, there is an uprising. There is an uprising against puffers, against polyunsaturated fats. I don't know if you've heard too much about this, if you've looked too much into it. There is this sort of rebellion that's saying that all of the research, the 20,000 plus studies that have been done in order to prove to us that DHA, EPA, these polyunsaturated fats, like these puffers or huffers, which is like the highly unsaturated fats, that they're actually really bad for us, and that they cause lipofuscin and yellow fat disease. Now, I don't agree with this whatsoever. I'm a big advocate of getting your omega threes in, getting those DHEs in. I think it's one of the most important molecules to be consuming in your diet. And I've been asking a few people, whoever I have on the podcast, if they know about this, because this little movement that's going on amongst a little sect within the health, within the conscious health community, they're starting to shit on it. And as with everything, all it takes is a little bit of misinformation and disinformation, and it begins to create murky waters. And in something that could be so beneficial and healthy, it's always just creating these doubts in people's mind, like, fuck, another thing, and like, is this right? Is this wrong? It's like, it's a hard one. And I just wanted to pass that by you to see if you had any idea on that. But with the seafood,
I haven't heard that. What is it that they say is problematic?
They say because it's essentially because it's highly unstable because of the molecular structure of it. Highly unstable, and then when it reacts with the oxygen in your system, it essentially just oxidizes straight away.
Oxidizes, right? And yeah, I haven't actually heard this. I'm interested to look into more of it. No, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And basically, what they're saying is just how the Ansel Keys studies were the studies that really created the war on fat. And was really like a big propaganda regime to sort of shit on fat and push the sugar industry forward. They're saying that the polyunsaturated fat industry was through studies by I can't remember this off the top of my head, the Boers, which were a family. Again, I don't want to say this on air as if like this is fact. I think it's the Boers, which is Beurs, and all of the studies that have come out about polyunsaturated fats stem from that one study, which is supposedly just as corrupt as Ansel Keys' original study. But I am yet to be convinced, to be honest with you. I really, because otherwise, like, why would DHA be found in all the food, in all of our ancestral foods that we know are so nourishing? And we know it's important. So I find that I tend to call bullshit on that. I think, as with everything, everyone wants to have something that makes them stand out, that makes them like the go-to source for something. And now it's shitting on DHA, it's shitting on polyunsaturated fats, which under the right under the wrong circumstances, they are pretty toxic. Like you don't want to be getting some polyunsaturated fats and then throwing them on the stove and cooking with them. That would not be the wisest decision to make. But I've seen that as well, that you're a big fan of oysters.
Yes, they're nutritional powerhouse. I love it. I love what you're saying there, that speaks to the point. So my kind of intuitive, you know, logical thought always is, you know, let's really think back, right, to what the first humans, like, what were they eating, you know, like, what was available and what wasn't available. I always just think that's such a more accurate guidepost of this, you know. And is it likely that they went into the sea with those of, you know, those, you know, kind of ancestors that lived by the sea and got fish? Probably. Why wouldn't they have, right? So again, I just think it's like, we can be a little less, we can uncomplicate things. So the way my brain works is, let's uncomplicate it. Let's just think, you know, how did we survive as a species? And it would make me, I would be hard pressed to believe that there isn't some other, like you're saying, agenda happening with now them calling that out, because I can't imagine. We have these huge seas, those huge oceans, fatty fishes, you know, we're probably eating them. and sustaining life and thriving. But yeah, so speaking of those oceans, I do love me some oysters. I always have. I think that they're, you know, nutritionally just such a huge, you know, in terms of the what they offer us, such a huge. So anyone out there who likes oysters, know that when you're eating them, go treat yourself to, you know, buck a shuck, because they're so good for the brain.
Yeah. And I think that was just a good point to make then. It's knowing just what our, like, realistically, what would our ancestors would have been doing. And it's only in the past 10,000 years, as we entered the Holocene period in the development of agriculture, that we started to degenerate. We started to really, we become a lesser version of who we really are. So back in the day, that's what they would have been consuming. It would have been animal fats, fat-soluble vitamins from the megafauna that existed in those days before the end of the last ice age. If we were seaside civilization, it would have been. We would have caught fishes of all, or seafood of all kind. And yeah, definitely would have gave us a good, healthy supply of fats. Now, again, nutrition is just one of many triggers in order to initiate certain epigenetic expressions of our genes. And I want to sort of take a tangent with... and just talk about some other things as well. So as well as nutrition, you know that you've got lifestyle choices, relationships. Mm-hmm. We've got so many other different factors to take into account. Now, what are some of your other main ones for keeping a solid mental health in, or an optimal? I should say solid. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in being solid or being normal. I want optimal. So, and yeah, I think everyone that's listening in wants to be optimal as well. So yeah, what are the other factors that people need to be aware of in their life that could be draining them of their mental energy behind the scenes, and they'd be unbeknownst to it?
I love that you even just acknowledge the possibility of optimal that exists, because I think a lot of the majority, I'm so happy that your listeners are in that category, but I think too much of the populations across the world at this point are settling for life, for sustaining life. You know, I think just this new normal that is out there. And I even told myself this too, as my health was declining, as my energy sucked, as I was unable to get up out of bed, you know, I started to tell myself, okay, well, this is what 30s feels like for me. And I asked all my friends and they all felt shitty too, you know? So I love that part of the biggest empowering part of my wellness journey is realizing that optimal can exist for a human, that we are not, you know, kind of needing to just make it by. And I say this because I think so many people out there are just making it by, and that, and or battling illness, at chronic illness at a young age. And that's just so sad to me. So just piggybacking on kind of the body health, or finishing that piece off, our sleep. You know, I think sleep is a hugely important area that people are not getting the adequate amounts of. So making sure that you're getting the sleep you need. I'm a huge fan in terms of the psychology piece of all things meditation, all things breath work. This falls under the category in the sense of stress management, of the effect of our thoughts and our emotions, the toll that they take on the physiological body. It's very real. I think most humans, and I probably say this a million times a week, spend way too much time in their thinking minds. Our thinking minds, in my opinion, affect our physical bodies down to our physiology, how they function, the way we manage our stress. This is where meditation and breath work comes in, really tuning into the fact that because most humans live in environments that are perceived as threats now, even city environments, relationships are now, you brought that up, they are perceived as threats, emotions are threatening, meaning we are spending way too much time as a species with a chronically activated fight or flight system. That really affects our mental wellness, our physical bodies. Cortisol rages through us. So there are many lifestyle things that we can do, like meditation, like breath work, like yoga, that really tap into that other nervous system, our parasympathetic, or rest and digest. I think we need to make sure that we're managing our body stress, our nervous system stress, in that very active way. I think there's a lot of tools that, if done consistently, and again, another word I say a million times, but when we're talking in terms of healing holistically and healing the mind body, we really are talking about habit change. So meaning consistent daily behaviors, you know, that might look different than maybe what your friends are doing or society is doing, but that really will allow you to not only be physically optimally well, but mentally optimally well as well.
What's your sort of go-to form of meditation and breath work if you were to if someone was to come to your clinic and just ask and be like, Nicole, like, I'm open to this whole meditation game. I mean, bit skeptical. I mean, I kind of think it's bullshit, but I'm open to it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, what sort of stuff have you got to kind of show me that this is legit and this can make a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, the easiest breathwork we can practice, and you know, if you follow me on Instagram, you'll see me doing some version of a breathwork every morning. But where I start people off is just teaching them, right, that the difference between a chest breath, which is normally where we breathe, you know, most of us are chest breathers. So if you put your hand on your chest, hand on your belly, usually your chest hand will be the one that moves. But if we can retrain your body to just do a deep belly breath, so even just doing one, two throughout the day, that's what is really going to activate that parasympathetic nervous system and start to build in some moments of calm. I think that's hugely helpful. I mean, people probably might have heard that breath used. You know, if you're going into a stressful meeting, take a few deep breaths. Really making sure that that belly breath is really going to translate to giving you a physiological sense of calm, which I think is hugely helpful, and enough Kool-Aid to drink. I start people off on breath work and they do start to feel that shift, you know, fairly early. And that's the thing, we can change our physiology, and breath work is one great way to do it. Meditation, I think just starting a practice where we're learning to change the relationship we have with our thoughts. I word it in that way because, again, I think a lot of people have some misinformation about what meditation is, that it's a Zen-like experience, that we get to this place of utopia where we have no thoughts, or that we can control or stop or battle away our thoughts. And that's not actually what meditation is. What meditation means is we are learning to observe our thoughts instead of assigning meaning, jumping down the rabbit hole of them, living under the dictatorship of what they're telling us to do or not do. Really empowering, whatever you call that human, that makes you, right? Whether it's your spirit, your inner being, you know, your soul, whatever it is that is it for you, is that person can be in control. And I think a lot of us, like I said, spend way too much time in our minds, spend way too much time listening to what our thoughts say and doing what they say. So really learning that observational distance where they can happen. And I can, you know, very, very cliche things that you'll hear said in you know, meditations are learning to view them as the clouds in the sky, right? Or the cars on the road, things like that. So just observing thoughts, detaching from them, and stepping out of them and empowering you to make a new choice. So that's like the biggest form of meditation. So whether that looks like popping in some earbuds and, you know, using one of the many apps that exist that are very good, or a, you know, YouTube has a million different meditation videos, or just learning how to practice with yourself, quiet in a room, tuning into your breath and paying attention to the thoughts that come up. And like I said, shifting that relationship to one that's just observational, just seeing what's up there. I think that's incredibly, incredibly empowering.
Yeah, it's interesting being able to distinguish and differentiate between the observer and the thoughts, because everyone seems to think that they are their thoughts. But if you're your thoughts, then what is it that's listening to the thoughts? And it's when you start to question that and connect with the fact that you are just the observer, it's yeah, it's mentally empowering, and it's also very relaxing at the same time. And yeah, I feel you about what you're saying, that a lot of the meditations kind of give off the wrong end goal or the wrong purpose of the meditation, and it creates difficulty for newcomers to understand how to integrate meditation into their life successfully, because they might do it for like one day and force themselves through like a 20-minute session and then be like, fuck that, it's like that shit didn't work, and then they never do it again. But with the breath work, there is more of an immediate effect. And it can be hard, like if you do like box breath work, where you do like a 2 second inhale, 2 second hold, 2 second exhale, 2 second hold, just something like that, that can be very challenging for a lot of people that aren't aware, conscious of their breath, and haven't sort of integrated just conscious breathing into their life before, without even going into any crazy forms of breathing. Like there's so many, it's almost unlimited. Again, the breath is... Yeah, the breath is unlimited in what you can achieve with it when you become like a master at it. But one of the things I wanted to ask Nicole is, do you experiment with like binaural beats or like brainwave entrainment, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they can be hugely helpful. essentially what they, you know, are doing is our brains fire in waves. So they, when you put in binaural beats, you know, making sure that you have your ear pods on, because you need both ears to be activated, it can actually change the frequency of your brain waves. So I suggest those too, for people who want to try just the kind of breath meditation where they're not being guided. But that can be really, really helpful to induce the meditate, you know, to help with the meditative state. There's all different frequencies out there now. I think it's really cool to play around with. There's relaxation ones. I actually just posted one, I think it was last week, that actually has been, you know, scientifically proven to calm the energy of the body, to promote relaxation, help with anxiety. It's on my Instagram. I think it's by a Marconi Union, I think might be the, I forget the name of the song. But yeah, so I've experimented with those. I think they're actually really great. I think they can be very, very helpful. And I think kind of, you know, those of you who are like the science backing out there, you know, I always try to explain the why of things, because I think there's the science minded out there. And I think it also can be helpful, but it actually just, you know, kind of retrains your brain waves in a way that can be incredibly, I think, helpful.
Yeah. Have you seen this before? Just let me see if I can grab it. I always kind of keep it close to me. Looks like something fresh out of the, out of Back to the Future. I mean, the lighting's not the best in my room. It's called a Mind Alive David Delight Pro Machine device. And it's an audio-visual entrainment device, and it's got a CES function attached to it, so which is like a cranial electrical stimulation. So it's very similar in that it does the binaural beat, but it combines the audio entrainment with visual entrainment, so it's almost like phototherapy. Oh, did you just disappear? Aha. You hear me again, Nicole?
Oh, that's so weird. I'm so sorry. I hope I didn't totally screw you. My headphones died and I thought it would be a quick switch.
Yeah, it's cool. I was trying to explain to everyone that that's kind of what my idea behind the fuck up was. It's cool. Yeah, what was I saying? I was describing the...
That very cool machine. I'm so sorry about that.
Yeah, it's cool. So basically, it's got the... So you got the audio entrainment as a part of it, and then it's also got the visual entrainment, which uses like phototherapy, where it's just going to be kind of like flashing colors into your eyes as you meditate with it. And you can choose a different range of colors, and obviously different colors are going to react on different emotional levels, which is a really good one. So you can tune yourself to, say, if you wanted to do something a bit more relaxing, you would choose like an alpha brainwave, mm-hmm. and then you would then use a soothing color to kind of like almost like a violet to kind of just like zone you in. And then on top of that, it's got the CES, the cranial electrical stimulation, which you put onto your earlobes, and it sends like a microcurrent over the temporal lobes. And it's basically, it increases neurotransmitter production. But supposedly, the research is showing that by having it the electrodes on the earlobe, it affects the vagus nerve. And obviously, we know that the vagus nerve has a lot to do with the activation of the parasympathetic nervous system. So yeah, it's a really powerful bit of kit that I've been using for quite some time now, and really fun. I was just wondering if you'd ever heard of it before, because it's solid, but it kind of just looks like it's something out of the 80s. And if they kind of gave it a bit of a facelift and made it look a bit more modern, I feel like they would totally be rocking the shit in like the biohacking world.
You sold me on it. I mean, yeah. I'm like, shit, I want to get this. It sounds awesome. I have not heard of it. I've heard of other, or I've seen kind of things like that, you know, kind of other people saying, talking about them. And I think they're really cool. Have you noticed benefits from using it?
Yeah, it's it takes a little bit of a while. I think the more you do it, the more you increase your overall sensitivity to it. It's like, and as well, it's like in entrainment itself, the more you do it, like you become more sensitive to those in being able to distinguish those states of consciousness. And you can almost then, through meditation alone, you can almost kind of tune yourself, because you've got more familiarity with those different states of consciousness. So you could be like, I could kind of put myself into more of an alert state, more of a theta creative state, kind of deep, like deep creative state. Yeah, it's definitely worth looking into. But there's a lot of interesting tech out there nowadays, which must be interesting from a psychologist's world, because a lot of the tech is a lot to do with the brain itself. And I was just wondering, is there anything that you know of that you're kind of a fan of that might not, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a quite a pricey bit of tech like that, but just in general, is there anything that for people that are listening, you could be like, hey, you should try out this or try out that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing really comes to mind, but I think what I'm fascinated by, or what I think is most important about anything of that nature, right? And I'm gonna simplify it. I'm almost gonna go the non-tech route, which is really teaching people to connect with their bodies. And again, I say that because I think, like I said earlier, we are so caught in the minds as a species, and we've lost such a connection with our bodies, our intuitive nature, and just our body rhythms and the way they work. And like I said earlier, the fact is that we can be way more connected to it, tune into it, and even affect change on it. So anything, whether it's that very, you know, kind of old school looking, but still very cool sounding gadget, or all of the things that are out there now, you know, my belief is that they can be incredibly valuable tools, because they do exactly that. They allow the human, right, the user, to connect with the body, to maybe feel the difference in body states, to learn the difference, right? What does it feel like? And to also maybe learn how they can control and induce those states themselves. So, you know, I think the old school one, the neurofeedback, that I think maybe where this whole, you know, kind of world might have originated, maybe even somewhere before that, but that's exactly what it is, right? Teaching you that, okay, when I feel like this, or when I do this, when I breathe this way, whatever it is, right, I am inducing this sort of brainwave state. And that's, I think that the unifying importance of any gadget is, you know, teaching the person to connect with their body. And again, to tune in to the moments and ways that they can actually control and change their physiology, even up to the way their brains are functioning. I just think that's so amazing and such an incredible tool.
Yeah, and I think as much as advanced as we like to think we are technology-wise, we can't recreate the human body. The human body is the most advanced piece of technology in the universe, and we underappreciate what it's really capable of, because we live life in a limited state, in a limited perspective of what the body is capable of. And yeah, it's we're kept in like a docile state through the food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe, the parasites within inside of us. There's so much shit that just keeps us out of tune with our body's intelligence, and our schooling system is created in order for us to only focus on left brain intellect. And there's so many different forms of intellect that just go under the radar and no one gives a fuck about. You got like emotional intelligence is one, the right brain intelligence is important, but body intelligence. And when you start to connect all of the dots, that's when you start to, like we were saying earlier, optimal. You become optimal because you can see the bigger picture. You're not just looking through life looking at life through a microscope, which just being directly left side brains, analytical thinking creates that perspective. And by incorporating a more of a holistic approach to improving, or just a holistic optimization, you can really start to see what this body is capable of. And that's one of my own personal goals with my own brand of pushing these messages out there, is to show people, as in, guys, you got to open your mind a little bit. You got to open your mind's eye, your gut's eye, then you can really start to see what being human's about. And when you really start going down those rabbit holes, that's when shit gets very Doctor Strange-ish, and you start going into you start going on a few internal trips, and you start looking at the universe just as much as you do the outside world. And it's it's a big goal of mine in order to get this message out there, which is why I wanted to connect with someone like yourself, because I know that you have very similar views on that. And I'm just keeping an eye on the time, Nicole. We've got about 5 minutes left before you've got to shoot. So I just wanted to sort of tie this one up with just some actionable steps for people that are listening to this, that if you are in some form of like having like an emotional blockages where you feel like you want to make a different change, but you feel like there's just these energetic blockages in your body that seem to manifest situations in your life that just keep you in a certain way of thinking and in a certain paradigm. What sort of protocols can people follow in order to really start to make a difference for themselves and for the people around them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I always kind of start in two places, right? Let's get the body foundationally working for us, not against us, right? So let's look at our nutrition. Let's look at how much we're sleeping. Let's look at all of those, you know, are we moving our bodies? So really just that basic, let's make sure our bodies are functioning as well as they can function. Because that does contribute to what we're seeing in our lives or not seeing. And then I think foundationally in terms of the mind and the psychology, like I was saying, let's get a breathwork practice happening. Let's get some connection with the body and the control and the power we have. Let's work on meditation. Let's work on separating ourselves from our thoughts. And I say both of those things. Also, I think the biggest part of this is let's take small, consistent steps daily. I'm always saying that motto because it can be very overwhelming. And I think, you know, one of the biggest killers of habit change or, you know, overcoming these blockages. I mean, the reality of it is, and I'm always a bearer of the blunt news, is that this is a long-term game here, right? These things aren't the things that happen overnight. So again, I know that we can get all the tools of healing and, you know, it goes on and there's subconscious work that I then do with people, et cetera, et cetera. But if you make the list of 10 things, you know, to do, I think you can get very overwhelmed very quickly. And again, like I said, the importance is doing it daily. So especially when you're not feeling well, you know, or when you're in any version of distress, physical or psychological or emotional, you know, of course you want to feel better, you know, tomorrow, if not sooner. Like, I understand that. But really, it's about habit change and building those small steps. So I'll always say, make the small promises to yourself each day and keep them. And start, well, like I said, with the body. Make sure what you're eating, how you're sleeping. Make sure that that's setting you up. Make small changes in those areas. If you're, you know, if you have a lot of changes to make, start very small. Like I said, remove those big glaring problematic foods. Get to sleep, you know, 15 minutes earlier, half hour earlier. Small changes, right? Get up a little earlier, whatever it means for you. Same thing. Start with 1-2 minutes of meditation. Start with 4 belly breaths a day. I mean, things that just become maintainable, that they become habit, and then add more, and then add more. It's an evolution.
Sound, yeah, solid answer, Nicole. And yeah, we will. We'll tie this one up here. Big thank you for coming on. For everyone that may not have been familiar with yourself and they were like, shit, Nicole knows what she's talking about. I need to follow up on this and maybe give her a follow. Like, where can they find more about yourself, your website, your social media handles?
Yeah, absolutely. So my major hub is Instagram. I can be found at the.holistic.psychologist. I'm on there posting every day. I try to answer all the comments, all the messages. I have a great community actually that's formed, so really supportive people. So if you're out there feeling alone in your journey, you can probably for sure find someone to connect with. I'm doing everything that I'm nagging people to do every day, so come find me there. I also just started a YouTube channel, The Holistic Psychologist. I often link it, you know, through my Instagram, and I have a website at yourholisticpsychologist.com. I have a mailing list if you guys are interested, and I have put together a free gut healing guide if you sign up for that mailing list. So that link is in my Instagram bio as well. So lots of fun stuff. I'm always releasing, you know, new tools. But yeah, I would say Instagram, come find me at the.holistic.psychologist.
All right. Sound. Well, there you have it, guys. Hope you enjoyed this one. Solid episode as per usual. And Nicole, thanks for coming on. Really, it's great. It was great to talk to you. One of those rare times where I'd be able to have a chat with yourself for an hour or so, especially being over here in the UK and you're over stateside. It's yeah, it's been a great opportunity for myself. And yeah, thank you for coming on. So guys,
I so appreciate you having me. Thank you. I love connecting with like-minded people. And I always want to thank you because you're helping me to get, you know, the message out there. And I love that you're sharing the same one. It's very cool.
Yeah. Thank you, Nicole. That means a lot to me as well. It's like when people kind of like, that's the saying, is it not Tupac? It's like realize, realize, realize. That's the one. Yeah. So
I love it.
So yeah, let's tie this one up. So guys, that's episode 29. It is episode 29. Yeah, episode 29. Fuck, that's going quick. All right, guys, episode 29 of the Red Pill Initiation Hour. Rolling out. Stay woke as fuck as always, and I'll catch you on the next episode.